2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. We're finishing off the West Coast swing this week with the Genesis Invitational, formerly the Genesis Open, and I guess before that the Northern Trust Open, and the Nissan Open or something like that back in the day. But this event has taken place at Riviera Country Club for a very long time. It's definitely one of the more iconic courses on tour, and this week it's going to be a much, much stronger field than we're used to here. We've got almost every single big name in golf here. We've got 9 of the top 10 players in the world, Rory, Rahm, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson. All of the big dogs have shown up this week to give one last final hoorah to the West Coast and California swing of the season before we head on down to Florida for that part of the season going into the Players. But this new look to the event, it's not going to play much different. There's just going to be about 20 some less golfers. The field's gone down from a field size of 144 to 120 this week with the invitational layout of the event, and kind of feels almost like a major. You know, this is going to be one of the stronger fields of the year. It really does remind you of an event like the Memorial, or one of those events where it's a super strong field and you've got some really, really good guys that are a lot cheaper than they would be, and it's hard to not like a lot of the plays up here because they all seem like a good value because everyone's a little bit cheaper than they usually would be. But after a week like last week with the really weak field at Pebble Beach and just really not having that much of a condensed good field since all the way back in, I guess, the Tournament of Champions or WGC China, really. The Zozo kind of felt like this in Japan during the swing season, but instead of having all the Asian guys at the bottom, I mean, the field rounds out pretty nicely. It's just very strong kind of top to bottom. I mean, you've got a lot of guys at the bottom that just kind of got a win over the last year and haven't been really good since, but still definitely by far the strongest field that we've been to so far this year. Looking forward to getting into this tournament here. Got a little bit of sore throat myself, so I'm going to make this a little bit shorter of a podcast than you're usually used to. So just going to be a little bit quick with it. We got that going around. Something about some Mexican beer, Corona, I don't know. Whatever it is, I got it, for sure. But anyway, seriously here, looking at the course at Riviera Country Club in, I think it's L.A. What is the actual name of it? It's like Pacific Palisades, California. We're basically in L.A. here for Riviera. It's a 7,300-yard par 71 course, so a bit long for a par 71. That's almost the yardage of, like, a par 72. And it has historically, been a course where your longer bombers have had a lot of success. Bubba Watson has won 3 out of his last 5 times here. Dustin Johnson has won here, and he has a really, really good history here. We do see a lot of the longer hitters. J.B. Holmes just won this last year, so that's something we have noticed with this course in the past. It's one of the hardest courses on tour when it comes to greens regulation percentage. Tour average is 66% for an event. This event, they hit about 58% of the greens on average. So that has a lot to do with these smaller green sizes. Of course, last week at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, there were, you know, those are the smallest courses on the PGA Tour, but this is right there with them. I think, this is towards the bottom five as far as green sizes go. It's about 5,000 square feet on average, which is pretty darn small. It's easy to miss these greens. Scrambling, strokes gained around the green is going to matter a little bit more than usual, I think. Those are the kind of stats we're looking for. They're actually, it's a harder course. It plays over par. So definitely one of the more difficult courses that you'll play on the year, but there are a lot of eagles to be had here, compared to some of the other courses, some of the other hard courses out there. And that's with only two par fives on the course. They're very easy, par fives to hit. And I do believe there's a drivable par four in there as well. But yeah, if you can somehow hit these really small greens, you're going to be in a pretty good shape. You're looking at those good POA putters, of course. Not a lot of balls hit the fairway here historically. And, we don't take a lot of, strokes from the fairway. This is one of the lowest, courses as far as strokes from the fairway, are concerned. So they're going to be hitting a lot of strokes out of the rough. So that's something I might look for, is guys who are okay hitting approach shots out of the rough. And as far as the approach shots go, most of them are taken between the 150 to 200 yard, range there. So, we're going to see a lot of, basically a lot of pars, not very many birdies really. Is one of the harder courses again, like I had said, plays just about a quarter stroke over par on average. These POA Anua greens are very small, but also very fast. These are one of the faster greens on tour, with a stimp of about 12.5 to 13 on average. It's pretty slick. Just about, one short of what you get at like a US Open with lightning fast greens. Putting on fast greens might be something to look at, but definitely POA Anua putting as well. And for the field rank splits that I have on the research station this week, which you can get access to at dfsarmy.com, of course, use promo code TACO to get you that lifetime 20% off discount. And you can look at the research station, which I am referencing throughout this pod here, available, of course, at dfsarmy.com. So the field rank splits that I have this week, and if you don't know what field rank is, it's a 0 to 100% rating. If you finish dead last, that's a 0% field rank. If you win, it's 100%. It helps look at all the different events, with all the different number of golfers in there, and kind of standardize how people do there. So we're looking at field rank at hard courses and on West Coast courses over the last few years. And those are the key splits I have up there for this week. And a lot of really interesting names that come up in those. But I guess before I get too far into this podcast here, it's going to be important to let you guys know that at dfsarmy.com, sign up with promo code TACO to get your lifetime 20% off. We cover all the daily fantasy sports. We had a really good kickoff to the XFL season last weekend, did extremely well. If you followed the notes, even, just really basically like I did, I just raw-tailed it. Tripled my money very easily. It's a very good week. I've got a lot in plan for that. For anyone looking to get into some football content after the NFL season has ended, and of course, get the Daytona 500 this upcoming weekend. Super stoked about that. We've historically done amazing at Daytona in the past. We're looking for another good 500 here. We had a lot of huge winners last year. Looking to keep that going to this year. Definitely one of the best sites out there when it comes to DFS NASCAR content, and even the Xfinity and truck stuff. We're all over that. Have really good stuff coming out for you guys there. So dfsarmy.com, we cover all things NBA, baseball, NFL, you name it. We cover it all in one cheap package. It's a really great deal, an awesome Slack. You can come in there and ask me some questions about the slate. I'd love to talk to you about that, since I can't do the longer pod this week, but definitely hit me up with any questions you have on the Slack. I'll be free to answer them. But yeah, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO, get that out of the way. And we can kind of head into this field here. You know, we got a sense of what we're looking for here. You know, their approach game, around the green, you know, putting a little bit more than last week, I guess, but still, you definitely want to be a good POA putter. That's the one surface that I look at more than, you know, bent grass and Bermuda. I really like to look at guys who are good at POA, because that can be a very alienating surface. You see a lot of guys who are either very good or really bad at that, you know, on the POA and with greens. They're very bumpy, and, you know, we don't really see them much past the West Coast swing here. This is where we get most of our POA Anua, but again, it's important to remember for, like, showdown and stuff, that, you know, with POA, it kind of opens up as the day goes along. It gets a little bit bumpier as the sun comes out, so that's just something always to keep in mind. I mean, generally, morning tees play, I think it's like 0.1 strokes lower than PM tee times just on average, but it might be a little bit more so here at this event. So just something to keep in mind. Of course, you don't know too much about weather yet until Wednesday rolls around. We start to get some good predictions, but it's not going to be quite as coastal as last week when we were, you know, right there on the coast, but that's still something that could come up, and we'll definitely have that covered for you as we get near to lock. But right now it's a Taco Tuesday. We're looking pretty good for this event. We've got, again, just a stacked field, and let's just dive headfirst into it, starting with Rory McIlroy. Rory's been just an absolute beast lately. Last few times we've seen him on tour, you know, he was third at the Farmers Insurance Open a few weeks ago. The last really, really strong fields that we've seen Rory at are were WGC China, which he won, and the Tour Championship, which he won. He's been doing a lot of winning lately. That's just kind of what Rory does. He's a favorite in this field. Now, you know, with someone around 5-1, 6-1 sort of odds, you know, we usually want to see those guys at around 12K, but you know, this week he's at $11,600, but with all the other plays in this range, with all the other studs coming in the fold, I don't think he's going to be nearly as popular as if he were, you know, at the Farmers, where he was one of, like, three or four studs. With it being, like, eight or nine studs in this field, you know, the ownership's going to get a little bit spread out up top, and you can really make a lot of the cases for a lot of these guys up here. So Rory, of course, is going to be a great play. He's never finished worse than 20th here. You know, him and Rahm, again, very similar numbers, but they finish in the top 10% of fields. He does that 79% of the time, which is just ridiculous. You finish in the top 10% of fields, you're almost guaranteed to make a pretty darn good value there, and he does that almost all the time. So if you can possibly pay up for him, definitely go for some Rory. Of course, it's And you could definitely make it work, because there are a lot of really good plays that are cheap. It's just, you know, it's about picking which guys you're going to spend all this money on. Of course, it's easier to get to him on FanDuel, but still, with how he scores, you know, he gains 51.8 DraftKings points to the field on average. He gains 6.6 birdies to the field on average. I mean, it's just really hard to avoid taking Rory McIlroy on DraftKings. He's so good at, you know, scoring, and He's one of those showdown plays that's like, you know, he's going to be chalk, but that's kind of good chalk to eat. Him and Rahm, just their scoring upside is so high. I really like that. Speaking of Rahm, so he's next on the board. He's at 11,200, and Justin Thomas actually has the same odds as him. You know, some sites he's actually favored, and he's a little bit cheaper on both sites, coming in a few hundred dollars cheaper. Now, Thomas, of course, has had three wins recently. Of course, a win at the CJ Cup and the win at the Century Tournament of Champions. He's really, really, really good at no-cut events, and I think he's going to be popular. You know, he's finished top 10 here the last 2 years. And, yeah, with JT, I understand it. He's someone that I play a ton. His stroke-scanned approach numbers are just... they're always off the charts, and he's consistently really good with them. gaining usually over a stroke per round on average. So I can definitely see the case with Justin Thomas, coming in with some good form. But the case for Rahm is simple this week, I think. So when you look at the types of holes on the course, and, you know, that's something I look at closely every single week. This is one of those weeks where just one hole type in particular just sticks out big time. And that's, of course, medium length par fours, which 9 out of the 18 holes on this course are between 400 and 451 yards. You got the one par four that's just outside the 400 to 450 range. We might as well throw it in there. It's just 1 yard off. So that's half the entire course that is in one specific length of par fours, just right in the middle. You only got one short par four. That's the gettable, damn near drivable one, and two of the longer ones. And I think last week we had like five or six of those on a couple of the courses, those long par fours, especially a couple of weeks ago. Like at the Farmers especially, had tons of long par fours. This one's all about the medium length par fours. You're not going to get a lot of your par five scoring like you would from guys like Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas ranks second in this field in short and long par five scoring. You've also got Xander Schauffele, who's number one in long par five scoring, number three in short par five scoring. It's not a par 72 course, so that's going to be kind of limited a bit this week with the par fives. But you've got some really nice medium length par fours, and if you can just hone in on that specific length, honestly, I'm going to get a lot of my favorite plays on the week from this range. And the number one golfer in strokes gained medium length par fours, that would be John Rahm. Just comes in slightly over Patrick Cantlay, who I absolutely adore this week again. It's probably my favorite play, but we'll get to him. But Rahm, debuted ninth here last year, has been in absolutely sickening form. In his last, I think it was his last 16 events played, he has 3 wins and 13 top 10 finishes. Just absolutely unreal form from Rahm. And we've been seeing him really, really avoiding putting up big scores. Very good at double bogey avoidance. Doesn't quite have the birdies or better gained numbers that a Rory or a Cantlay or even a Tiger Woods has as of recently. But they're still pretty competitive. 3.1 birdies or better gained to the field on average. Again, not quite as good as the guys around him, but that's still pretty solid. And Justin Thomas, one of the knocks I have on him, I guess, is that at hard courses over the last year, he's played 7 of them and only has a 65% field rank split. That seems to be quite lower than anyone else in that range. That might be the one spot that I'm seeing from him where it's kind of a negative for him. He did have the miscut at the Sony Open, of course, when he was 5-1 and $12,000. And not very good at putting on Poa Anua greens. Loses 0.4 strokes per round on Poa Anua greens. So love Justin Thomas. I'll probably still have a decent amount of him. But if he's looking to be the chalk in this range, I'm thinking that I might pay up a little bit more for a lower-owned John Rahm, who's number one in the field in the par four, the hole type category that we are looking for, the exact right one. So I think that's what I'm going to do up top. Of course, if I can afford Rory, I'm going to go for it. But Rahm, definitely looking like a solid play. Tiger Woods overpriced again at $10,400. Not much to say about him. He's been really good when he has played, but he plays pretty sparingly. Did well at the Farmers, but that's arguably one of his best courses. Historically, won his event at the Zozo in Japan. Missed the cut here in 2018, but finished top 15 last year. And this is an event that he usually skips. He had skipped it for like a decade straight. But yeah, anytime we've seen him tee it up on the West Coast so far, he's been really good. And that's something I forgot to point out about John Rahm as well. Going back to Rahm real quick, he has 7 events played over the last 2 years on the West Coast, and he has an average 96% field rank, in those seven events. Just absolutely insane. So he's finishing in like the top 5% of fields every single time. That's like a top 7, top 8 almost every single time. It is insane how high his upside is. So again, another reason I like Rahm this week. With Tiger, you know, I usually have the same take on him about every week. Been really impressed by the birdies and stuff he's been getting. So it makes him a strong showdown and GPP sort of play. I think he matches up for this course decently. Of course, it hasn't been one that he's been, you know, sort of like Pebble Beach. He skips it a lot, but he's overpriced. But if you don't mind getting there, he's much easier to afford on FanDuel, where he's cheaper than guys like Dustin Johnson and right there with like Brooks Koepka. But on DraftKings, it's hard to pay for someone that's, you know, obviously overpriced. Like Dustin Johnson is, you know, favorite over Tiger pretty significantly, and that's with the Tiger bump in odds that he gets. Like he's 15-1 right now, so he's probably really like 20-1. He just has the name value bump. But I mean, you know, he's won a couple times now, and really three times over the last year he's won, including the Masters. So can't really just count Tiger out. He's someone that I always have to have at least a little exposure to. So Dustin Johnson, now he's an interesting play. $10,000. He has seriously good history here, just like last week. And this is going to be a kind of a trend. This is something you see with the West Coast swing. You see, not only you see guys doing well at courses year after year after year, you see guys that are good at like all of these different West Coast courses year after year after year. Guys like Charles Howell, guys like J.B. Holmes, and Bubba Watson recently. Jason Day, another one. We've seen just over the last few weeks, guys that were playing badly, like you know, Phil Mickelson last week, and you know, they just get these courses that they're just really good at, and all of a sudden they're just really good. And that's something we could see from DJ this week. Of course, last week at Pebble he had very, very similar course history with some wins, tons of top fives. Just looking at DJ's last six, he missed the cut in 2013 after finishing T4 in 2012, but if you look at his last six, runner-up, runner-up, fourth, win in 2017, 16th, and then ninth last year. Pretty dang solid. He was looking like he was going to have another top 10 last week until his final round, where he went like 6 over par on Sunday. It was not very good. Of course, you know, it's the Pro-Am, it's kind of whatever, but still very disappointing from him. And he ranks 53rd in the field in projected fantasy points per round at this course. And, you know, a lot of it is his medium par 4 scoring is not really that great. He's 45th in the field. He's number one in the field by a good amount on long par 4 scoring, but there just aren't as many of those to take advantage of this week, along with the long par 3s. Most of the par 3s in this course are actually of the shorter variety. So that's kind of interesting to see with Dustin Johnson. I'm going to lead towards a fade for him. I think people will take him because of the course history, because he's favored over Tiger, who's more expensive than him. But again, I also think a lot of people will see that he was so bad last Sunday, and that will kind of keep him from being like too popular. But still, just more evidence that, you know, the ownership's going to kind of be spread a bit up top, and that's just kind of how I see it. Because most of these guys, I mean, Rory, Rahm, Thomas, Tiger, Dustin Johnson, Cantlay, Bubba Watson, all these guys at the very top, they all have pros and cons. There's no one that really sticks out too much to me outside of, personally, I think, next guy we're going to talk about here, Patrick Cantlay, $9,800. My God. But, okay, Cantlay, $9,800, 11-4 on FanDuel, an even better value on FanDuel. Top 15 finishes here the last 2 years since coming back from the injury hiatus. I think it'll be a little bit popular, but man, Cantlay just keeps on hitting constantly, always finishing the top 10% of fields. Now, what's that? I think he's been the top 30% of fields for like, 14 straight events. It's just unreal stuff from him. His numbers are up there with Rahm and McIlroy, if you can even believe it. It's crazy to see how good this guy's gotten. But over the last year, his field rank 85% only person that's higher is Rory McIlroy at 89%, but that's just because he's unreal. But on hard courses, he's number one in the field. He's played 8 events at hard courses with a 91% field rank split. Compare that to 81% with Rory McIlroy. And, you know, does pretty decently on the West Coast as well. Not quite as good as Rahm McIlroy in that regard, but still, finished in the top 10% of fields 68% of the time, trailing only Rahm and McIlroy there, and at quite the discount. The dude's legit. Again, second in the key par 4 range this week. Ranks number one in projected round score, number one in projected DraftKings points per round, number one projected FanDuel fantasy points per round. Just solid. Every single thing about him just looks really good. Gaining strokes in every single category and every single split. Hitting it 304, and recently he's been hitting a 66% adjusted driving accuracy percentage to go with that 304 off the tee. That's pretty solid. Gaining 35 fantasy points to the field on average. Just doing everything right. Just being really solid here. He's my favorite play of the week again last week. T11 last week could have been a little bit better. It was just kind of pedestrian on the weekend, but still. He's just super solid. I'd pay for him in cash for sure. He's just a solid, solid commodity. The only person missing out of the top 10 this week that could possibly be more consistent than Cantlay would be Webb Simpson if he were to play. He'd be the only person even contesting him for the number one spot in my mind as far as best plays on the board. So love Cantlay, can't get behind him anymore. The next play I'm about to talk about, the next few actually are pretty interesting. Bubba Watson at $9,600. Yeah, you heard that right. Bubba Watson at $9,600. But it's worth it. If anyone is a slave to course history, it's Bubba Watson. You saw at the Travelers, he's won there like 3 or 4 times. This is another place. Again, he's won 3 out of the last 5 times he's played, not counting his withdrawal in 2017. He also withdrew in 2011, but still, the guy is an absolute beast here. He does not rate out well in any stats outside of recent form. He finished 3rd at the Waste Management and 6th at the Farmers Open. What do those places have in common? He has extremely good course history there as well. It's just one of those things. He just so happens to be good at these courses. But he's been doing it all through the putter lately. Like, all through the putter. Not even gaining strokes off the tee much like he usually would. It's just been legitimately all putting recently. And that has to regress at some point. So even though he has 3 wins here since 2014, I can't justify to myself paying up for a Bubba Watson at $9,600. I mean, yeah, we'll probably have a little bit of exposure, but I'm definitely going underweight on the field here for, Cantlay right there. And just some of these other plays here, honestly. Then the next play at $9,400, Brooks Koepka. Just lost his number one ranking in the world to Rory McIlroy last week. And, you know, he's kind of boosted a little bit by the fact he has those 4 majors over the last 2 years. And that's really the only reason for his ranking inflation. But realistically, he's still a top 5 golfer in the world. And he's been doing all right in Europe. Just kind of all right, doing his thing. Of course, that's where he got his starts. He didn't go through the web.com or Korn Ferry Tour as it is now. He played in the European Tour, sort of like we see guys like David Lipsky doing, just doing their thing over there. Kitayama is a good example currently. But yeah, Brooks Koepka on tour recently. We haven't seen much from him. 106th at the Shriners, withdraw at the CJ Cup. It's always kind of been the same thing with him. He only shows up for big events. Well, this is a big event here. So, I don't know. It's hard to know what to make of his, sporadic showings over the fall swing. He obviously hasn't really cared much about it. He's got better things to do. But, the ownership's going to be on the lower side. His price is very low to how he's been priced over the last year. Does not have course history here outside of a miscut in 2017. That's it. So, another guy that likes to skip this event, but with it being such a marquee event now, he's kind of forced to play it. Just a really, really risky GPP contrarian play, in my opinion. Then you've got Hideki Matsuyama. $9,300. He's not going to be as popular as he was at, like, Waste Management, where he ended up doing all right. Really, his form has been extremely solid over his last seven events, finishing T16 or better in every single one, except for a T45 at the Farmers Open, but I was really impressed by his T12 at the Sony Open, because he was historically really, really bad at that course and missed the cut every year, and came back and did pretty well. And his approach game, of course, has just been on fire, and it's not like that's something that'll regress. That's the best part of his game. Besides that, and his around the green game. And like I said earlier, around the green's going to matter here. So, love Matsuyama. I think his ownership will be somewhat tame, you know, because some of the plays in the lower 9K that I'm about to talk about here will be a little bit more popular than him. But I have no problem with him. A very good price on FanDuel, too. He's cheaper than both Xander and Tony Finau that I'm about to talk about here. So, you know, good value over there. Getting into Xander. I don't know how you pronounce his name, actually. Pretty sure it's Xander, actually, but I like the sound of Xander, so I'm going to go with it. You know, look at Xander Schauffele. He's 20-1. Hideki's 25-1. So, again, that's why I think his ownership's going to be a bit lower. That and the fact that, you know, Xander at strong fields is very... just very good. All of his wins seem to have come at reduced strong fields, tour championship, WGC events, tournament of champions. That's just where he thrives. Had the disappointing miscut at the Farmers Insurance Open, but that's a place where he just sucks at every single year, I guess. So, but other than that, had runner-up finishes at Century, coming right behind JT in that one. And then coming in right behind Rory McIlroy in China at the WGC event. Just thrives in strong fields, and this is definitely going to be a strong field and good for GPP scoring, usually. I get the greens and regs pretty often, and I was good at avoiding the double bogeys. Just kind of been doing his thing. He's also a much better putter on POA surfaces, so that's something I'm... definitely looking forward to with him here. Definitely going to have some shares in GPP. Almost borderline cash safe, honestly. Then you've got Tony Finau, who, his course history here looks a lot like his recent form. Good lately, but if you look a little further back, it's kind of yikes. So he's finished 2nd, 6th, and 14th so far in this West Coast swing. If you look at his fall swing, he missed 3 cuts going into that. Now, one of them was impressive. Was it 6th place finish at the Farmers, I do believe? No, Waste Management. His runner-up finish was super impressive. So he's repping the Kobe gear. He embodied the spirit of Kobe Bryant himself and just started balling out. But, of course, he also embodied the spirit of Tony Finau and came 2nd and didn't win, which is what he likes to do. And he's done that here in 2018. Finished 2nd, did not win. He's going to get a real win one of these days, I swear, but... as of right now, he only has that win from the Puerto Rico Open, which doesn't really count. But still, he's someone that's always going to be popular. Him and X is going to be really, really popular, I think. You know, people are going to see that form with him in the 15th and the 2nd over the last 2 years. But it was not pretty at this course for him in the years before that. But still, you know, with him almost, really likely to make the cut, I don't know. He's so good at stuff like fantasy scoring. Good with his approach game. Has had a hot putter recently. I mean, I'm probably going to get off of him, but I really couldn't talk ill of anyone that plays him. I mean, he's going to be a solid play in this range. You can kind of make the case for a lot of these guys here in this range, and a lot of them are interchangeable, and I'm going to kind of go off of ownership, to be honest. I see him and X being very similar in ownership, so it's hard to know who... I'm going to go with there, but I'm leaning X. You got Adam Scott at $9,000. He hasn't been on tour since really WGC China. We haven't seen him in America since the Shriners Open. And he's been making all his cuts and stuff here. It's great history here. 7th, and then the T53 in 2018. It's not that great, but before then, 11th, 2nd, 10th, 17th. Super solid history here. This is a course he likes to go to. Now I could see myself using some Scott because I see the guys around him being more popular. I think he will be certainly more popular than Jason Day underneath him, but if you look above him, Finau, Xander, Hideki, those guys definitely going to be more popular than him. But I think his really good course history will keep people on Scott. And people generally like to play Scott, even when he's in a bad spot. And his driver has not been very good recently, but his fairway to green game, I guess that's what we'll call it, has definitely been keeping him afloat as of late, because it's been really good. And you always know his irons, long irons, are, you know, one of the best that there is. And it's kind of always been that way. Then you've got Jason Day. So, over the last two events, he's come back from the grave and had some really good performances. T4 last week at Pebble. The thing about him is at Pebble and at Farmers, his course history just balls out. It's just like Bubba Watson's, Phil Mickelson's, just super, super good course history at both of those events. Now, this would be the litmus test here. This is when, you know, we're going to see, okay, is it just the West Coast, the POA, making him play all, you know, really well here, or is it just he's figured something out? And, you know, another thing is, like, you know, is he just doing well at courses he's been good at, and is he about to just fall on his face now that he's going to a course that he's very bad at? How bad is he? Well, he has only played this event 4 times. Only once in the last 7 years. But of all the 4 times he's played this event, he's never finished better than T62. It's a really, really bad course history for him. So we'll see if his form can hold up at a course he's so egregiously bad at. Leishman is going to be another sort of test here. Coming off the win at the Farmers Open. We haven't seen him since. Finished, you know, has 2 top 5 finishes here in the last 5 years. But every other finish outside of that, a miscut. So really up and down stuff from him. It's always interesting to see how guys perform after a win. One of the most notable examples I give is like Hudson Swafford. A few years ago, he had the longest made cut streak in like the last decade or so, making like over 30 straight cuts. I think him and Stenson were both doing that at the same time. And he culminated his super long made cut streak with a win. Once he got that win, he missed the next 3 cuts in a row and has not been good since. I don't know what it is. You just get a sudden influx of money and, you know, what do you know? Of course, Leishman is no stranger to winning. So it's not like, you know, a scrub guy getting a win, but we haven't seen him win a lot. I mean, we've seen him come, I guess he's won things like the CJ Cup and stuff, but, you know, the Farmers win, that was a nice big marquee win for him. I think he actually had a pretty good win last year, if I'm not mistaken. That must have been the year before. But, yeah, we've seen him come, like, runner-up in majors and stuff, but that was a pretty darn good win for him at the Farmers. It'd be interesting to see if he can just go right back into form, because he was in very inconsistent form going in. He's actually one of the most inconsistent golfers as far as week-to-week field rank splits and standard deviation. You can see that under the consistency column under field rank splits. He has one of the lowest consistency numbers, so just screams GPP to me, which is funny because historically Leishman has always been one of my cash staples, but definitely not right now, and I don't think he rates out for this course very well. Then you've got Patrick Reed, who I think is also like top 3 or top 4 in that medium length par 4 scoring range. His ownership's been kept very low, even though his form has been extremely good. Outside of a miscut at the weather clusterfuck that was the Sony Open, other than that, it's been, you know, tons of top 10 finishes for him. 84% field rank over his last 10 events. Really solid numbers, honestly, from him compared to Leishman, who also played 10 events in that span with a 59% field rank split. Or Jason Day, who played 9 events in that span with a 53% field rank split. And if you want some laughs, Phil Mickelson in that range has played 11 events, 43% field rank split. So I go show you the difference there. Reed has been low-key, really good over the last few months, honestly going back to the playoffs, but he has almost no history here. 90th and a T59 back in 2017. That's it. So don't really know much about him at this course here, but theoretically, this works out really good for him. and in 4 events played on the West Coast over the last 2 years, he has an 89% field rank split on average. So that's pretty good, honestly. Now, $8,500, this is when you start to really notice the pricing. Justin Rose, that is super low. A year ago, he would be 10,000 plus in this field for sure. But, I mean, he's barely played. He missed the cut last time at the Farmers Open. Again, not really going to know what to make out of him. Only hitting 56% of his greens and the limited amount of data we have from him recently. But, just a lot of rust. And honestly, not very good at the medium par 4 scoring range this week. I'm going to let his price kind of bait other people into playing him, but I'm not playing him much this week. This whole kind of range here is a lot of fades for me. You got Jordan Spieth, who had a top 10 finish last week. It's kind of interesting to me, I guess. At $8,400, I think he's overpriced still, don't get me wrong. But the last round we saw from him, the last shot length measured round at Pebble Beach, he gained over 4 strokes approach. Now, if he can keep that up, I'm very interested. I think I'll save him for Showdown, because he's such a round 2 Showdown god. If he has another good approach round 1, I'm just going to hammer him round 2, like I usually do anyway, and then just get off him for when he falters on the weekend. But, I don't know, last Sunday, he made a charge. I mean, probably because he was barely made the cut and all that, but he really did make a charge on Sunday, basically the polar opposite of Dustin Johnson. Then you've got Phil Mickelson. Now, the last few events he's played at have been at places he has insanely good history at, millions of wins. You know, American Express, where he missed the cut. Farmers, missed the cut. But Pebble, he finished third. Pebble, he's so good at. He had the 3 top 2 finishes going into, Pebble last week. And, of course, he did it again. Just a course he can't not be good at. But this course, he has some wins. He won back-to-back, I think, in 08 and 09. Runner-up in 2012, 6 in 2018. But other than that, kind of pedestrian finishes, despite, just really solid history. Still, crazy overpriced for me. Like I said, his last 11 events, 43% field rank split. Making only half his cuts over the last year. Just not someone I'm too interested in. Answer, who's been super hot and continued that top 10 kind of streak he's been going on in Europe, had another top 10 there. Interested in him, even though he's got kind of an inflated price here. A guy that I'm on for sure that's in my core. A couple of guys, got a couple of Asians I'm really into here. Colin Morikawa, $8,100. Still never missed a cut. Insane approach game. Very good the medium length par 4s. He's going to be a core play for me, but he'll also be popular. And then at $8,000 even, which, mind you, is under the average price, you got the man, the legend himself, Sungjae Im. This is how much of a grinder he is. Of everyone I've talked about so far, Abraham Answer and Hideki Matsuyama are the 2 tied for the most events played over the last year, 28 events. In the same span, Sungjae Im has played 37. He is a grinder. He grinds constantly. Now, he grinded his way to a missed cut here last year in his debut, which, Morikawa has never played this event, but still, he's made a bajillion cuts in a row at this point. At such a cheap price, I really do like him for cash games this week, even though he missed the cut here last year. I don't really care. He's always making the cut now. That's just been his thing. He has struggled a bit at hard courses, again, I'm going to look more to Morikawa than Im, but Im, his price, I think, is still making a cash game team. And I considered him really hard over Paul Casey. Casey, of course, has no miscuts here, the runner-up in 2015, T25 last year, generally does good here. Thing with him is, though, he was looking really good last week at Pebble, where he's like the third most expensive guy, or like the fourth most, or whatever. It even rates out well here. 4th in the entire field in projected fantasy points per round. Very, very good in the medium par 4 scoring range, which I'm looking at. Great ball striking. Just his putting was so ridiculously awful last week. He shot like an 81 on Sunday. It was miserable. It was like 9 over par. It was god-awful. Face planted into his T64 finish. I don't know what to say. It's like Dustin Johnson, but even worse. He lost 3 strokes to Dustin Johnson on Sunday. So that's a problem. That's really bad. I mean, at $7,900 though for Casey, that's still an insane price. It's just around like that. That leaves a flavor in your mouth for sure. So I don't know. Might even look to Bryson DeChambeau at the same price, but that might be just me being crazy here. He did finish 15th last year, but I don't know. I rarely consider DeChambeau anymore, but especially with how many strokes he loses approach. But man, I don't know. At least he's got a lot of GPP upside. Casey, I don't know. I miss when he was a cash game play. He's just been kind of inconsistent lately. But man, that round is bad. A guy that I'm really going to be looking to a lot. I looked to him last week, and it was all right, but this is a very, very good course for him. He comes here every single year. Matt Kuchar at $7,800, reminding me of the Masters. And West Coast events over the last 2 years, he's played 6 of them, 87% average field rank split. That is very good. 76% on hard courses. Solid to all these things. Just good at what you need to be good at here, and just has a nose for top 10s. He really does. So I like him at well under average salary. Also like Sergio Garcia at $7,800. I assume he'll be low owned. Has not been good in America. We haven't even seen him in America since like the playoffs. But I believe he has a few top 5 finishes here since 2012. I believe in Sergio, honestly. I think he's going to be a great GPP contrarian play. And then a play I can't get my mind around. This is just a straight up trend guy, JB Holmes. So JB Holmes, over the last year, he's made 48% of his cuts. Just horrible. Didn't do anything in the fall swings. Withdrew from the CJ Cup. Finished almost dead last at the Century Tournament of Champions. That's it. But then the start this season, starting at the Farmers Open into the Waste Management Open into Pebble Beach, 16th, 16th, and 14th. All courses he has insanely good history at. Heading into this course, where he also has insane history at, and is the defending champion at $7,700. If this was just any course, I mean, this is a guy with a 45% field rank split over the last year. Very, very bad. 47% of hard courses. Very bad. But just over the last 3 rounds, he just so happened to play really well at courses he's very good at, and this is another course he's very good at, but it's been all putting. All putting. And he's a much better POA putter than on other surfaces, that is for sure. But my God, he's been hard carried by his putter. And I don't know if I can even get behind that. I mean, gotta have a little in GPP, I guess. He's basically Bubba Light. That's what he is this week. So, I don't know. Moving through this field, a sneaky play I like is Ryan Moore. He's got some top 10s here. Low-key got some top 10s. Really has 3 finishes of T13 or better in his last 5 events played, but no one really likes to roster him. That's just kind of how he is. His approach game has been amazing lately. Kevin Na, tons of top 10s here at this course, although it's a very streaky course history here. And he's been just kind of all over the place, withdrawing, winning tournaments, just all over. It's good for GPP. I don't mind that. But double bogeys a lot. I mean, everything about him just screams GPP. But I do like what I've seen from his approach game recently in the rounds that we've checked. And just a cheap price. You've also got the same price there at $7,500. You got Charles Howell III, who was 6th here last year. He had a horrible, like, this used to be an awful event. This is where you got off of him every year. But the last 3 years, he's actually done really well at this course. He's been oddly inconsistent. Missing the cut at the American Express for the first time ever, last time we saw him 4 weeks ago. That was like the first time he had ever missed the cut there in like 15 tries or something. But he doesn't like to miss 2 cuts in a row, I can say that. He's all about his bread. He's all about making the money. So at $7,500, that's just a super cheap price for him. And what is his best hole type by far? It is medium length par 4s. Just another thing I'm going to throw on out there. And you've got Max Homa, same price, who's been the talk of everything, really. He was 18% owned in the $5 last week. 18% owned at $8,300, being Max Homa, a guy that, like, he's not that great. Rates out 109th in projected round score. Like, over the last year, like, 57% field rank split. It's not great. Even with a win thrown in there. Yes, he had a win. Heck, over the last 12 he's played is a 49% field rank split, and that includes the 14th, 6th, and 9th he's gotten over the last 3 weeks. Like, he was really, really, really bad up until just recently. But once it hit California, he just made cut after cut after cut. He's from California. It must be a California thing. And he made the cut here last year, so I expect him to be popular. I would much rather play Charles Howell III. That's just me, but a very similar sort of play to J.B. Holmes. You just kind of keep going with the form. I don't know. Moving down here, you got Scottie Scheffler at $7,400. A very interesting play there. Has had a few bad tournaments in a row after some seriously good form to start the year. Probably good for GPPs there. Ranks third in projected fantasy points per round. Has one event played here in 2018 as an amateur, and he sucked. He missed the cut by a bunch of strokes, so I don't really know what to make of that. I got Ryan Palmer, who finally got off of that, you know, streak of form, and just barely missed the cut at the Waste Management Phoenix Open when he was the chalk. I think everyone's going to jump off of him, and doesn't really have history or anything here to convince people to get back on him, but I think that's going to be a nice place to get on him now that he's not going to be the chalk. Good price for him. Cameron Champ, who's been really solid since his win at the Safeway Open in California to start off the swing season. And he's super long off the tee. No one's as long as he is, but he's missed the cut pretty badly here over the last 2 years, and that's pretty much been it from him. He has a huge problem with double bogeying, a huge problem with scrambling, so I don't really know if I'm going to go there. I would honestly rather go to Brendan Todd. As weird as it is to say that out loud. Just no one owns the guy, even though he had back-to-back wins. I know it was in the false swing, but he had like three top four finishes in a row, just with two wins in there, like just insane. And since then, it's not like it's been horrible. I mean, he was horrible at the Century Tournament of Champions, don't get me wrong, but I did well at Sony, T21. T37 at the American Express was not too bad. He is a bit short off the tee for me. I wish this was Pebble. I'd have a much better time playing him at Pebble. But I think if you're going to get him like 2 or 3% ownership, that's a very good play to make there. And then I also like Joaquin Neiman at $7,300. He's moving places in Vegas, that's for sure. Seriously underpriced, I think. And he's not as shiny of a toy anymore. So I think his ownership might even stay in the single digits, hopefully. But I love that play right there. If only he could putt. You just gotta pray that, you know, he doesn't like quad putt a 5-footer and you should be good to go. Alex Noren at the same price, I think he's gonna be more popular. He's been in really solid form in America recently, and only has a T16 finish here in 2018. That's pretty solid too. Very good around the green work. Then you got last week's winner, a guy that we were all over and was only 4% owned in tournaments. Had him as, I think it was number 4 overall in value on the Domination Station, and he was written up as one of our best value plays on the cheat sheet. That's Nick Taylor, wire-to-wire winner last week. What a stud. So he's made 4 straight cuts here, generally really good. If anything, you know the guy's a cut maker, but, you know, is he going to be like Hudson Swafford and just suck now that he's gotten his win? It was his first win since 2014, so who knows? Or is he going to be like Sun Kang from last year and then just win and then just continue to have top 10s? I don't know. I guess we're going to see. And at $7,200, I guess that's the Canadian quarantine because they also got Adam Hadwin there, who's very popular last week but missed the cut, so I'm sure that everyone's going to hop off him. But outside of a missed cut last year, has very good history here and statistically still rates out extremely well. Of course, we didn't get all the strokes gain data from last week. We only had it on the 2 pebble rounds, but still, Hadwin, you know, rates out as a good odds value play. Just a better golfer than the guys around him, I think. Not as much as last week, but still a pretty decent play. Nice bounce back kind of play. Generally a very good cut maker. And the best bounce back play, I think, sticking in this range is Russell Knox. Granted, he does not play this course, like, ever. But he was super, super solid to start the year. Made, like, 9 straight cuts, all top 40s. And then just, he would have made the cut last week if it was a regular 2-round cut event. But his Saturday was just awful, and he missed the cut, and it sucked. He killed an insanely good lineup I had that had Nick Taylor, and it had the, I think it had Jason Day as well. It was just an insanely good lineup. Had Kevin Streelman finish solo second, like, really good lineup in the $3, but Knox just ruined it. But, you know, he was kind of chalk, almost like one of the chalkiest guys on the slate last week, and now I'm sure everyone's going to abandon him and run the other way. Could just be a bounce back play, but I don't know. And you got Piercy, same price. I mean, $7,200, full of very interesting plays. Piercy was very, very popular last week, and he has made like 5 straight cuts going in, looking pretty good, but his history here is horrendously bad. He's actually played this event a lot. Withdraw, T77, T61, T77, 142nd, T72, just so many finishes outside the top 60. It's going to be hard to recommend him, especially with that new T65 and tie cut rule, because it's not looking good for him. Even though he makes 91% of his cuts in general, that's going to be kind of a bad course history versus good current form sort of deal. Jason Kokrak at $7,100, very good history here. I kind of like him. I don't think he's going to be too popular, even though he rates out really well. Just not a name that people are used to piling on. At 7K, you got some guys are really liking, Corey Connors, who's just been a continual great play for me. He's been perpetually underpriced, just cannot putt. He's actually been gaining strokes putting over his last 10, but man, is he bad on POA. I would just proceed with caution with him because he's so bad on POA. And then Erik van Rooyen. We have not seen much from Erik van Rooyen recently, but he's very, very good at medium-length par fours. He rates out 5th in the field in projected round score. He's made every single cut in America over the last year, and we've only seen him... last time we saw him in America was the U.S. Open, where he made the cut there. They finished 8th at the PGA Championship, 20th at the Canadian Open. So, again, very, very sparingly we see him. But even in Europe, he's been really good. He's had a really solid year, making a lot of cuts. I like that play a lot. Like JT Poston at $6,900. Makes a lot of cuts. Right now he's in my cash lineup, honestly. Really, really good here. 17th and 28th in his 2 attempts here. Brian Harman at the same price, also a good play. He's just been making cuts, although he does have a pretty bad history here. Carlos Ortiz is one of the better plays of the week. His history here is 20th, 26th, and 9th, so very good. I had the horrible, almost last place finish at the Farmers Open, but other than that, he's been extremely good. Some top 5 finishes in the swing season, and most recently T25 at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Lanto Griffin, who, you know, has had 2 horrible miscuts sandwiched by top 10s, and of course had that super strong start to the year. He's going to be a very interesting play, super cheap. The 3 hard courses he's played at, he has a 97% field rank split. So that, you know, that should be pretty interesting, seeing how he ends up performing. And, you know, getting into the 6K range, there are a lot of good plays here, but would like to wrap this thing up. I will mention Tringali at $6,500. Historically, he's been very good here. Just good at making a lot of cuts and stuff. Denny McCarthy at $6,600. I don't think he's missed a cut on the season so far, but just a heads up here. Missed the cut here pretty badly last year. His worst event that we've seen from him was at the Farmers Insurance Open on the year. He finished T64, just barely made the cut, and was awful on the weekend. The thing about McCarthy is no one relies on putting more than McCarthy, and on average, over the last 50 rounds, he gains 1.3 strokes putting, which is more than anyone. Like, he's the best putter on tour, but he loses 0.2 strokes on average on POA. He's a bad POA putter, just a fade for me this week. And then you got Watney, who I don't think is going to be popular. who is pretty low-key good here and kind of rates out well for me. Very good approach numbers. And then a few warnings I wanted to give out. Like, Joel Damon, who knows with him? He's had a couple of withdrawals recently, but he also has, like, four top 15 finishes since the Shriners, which is amazing. The big one I wanted to put out there was Nate Lashley. We love Lashley. Lashley is always a top value play for us over the last year or so, but right now, I withdrew again last week. He's in the field here for now, but that's just for now. It's just so weird. He came third at the Waste Management Open, but that's sandwiched in between like three withdrawals. I don't know what to make of him. It's just got to be a no play at this point. It's just kind of sad to see. Von Taylor has finished top 20 here the last 2 years. Had a streak of top 20 finishes until the last 2 weeks where he's missed some cuts at courses he's good at. Don't really know what to make of him, but he's so cheap. I don't mind it for GPP, especially with the increased made cut percentage here. And to finish out the very bottom here, Adam Shank has looked pretty good, making a lot of cuts at $6,400. Aaron Baddeley, we had a member that was on the bag for him last week at Pebble. He had a top 25 finish there. He was pretty solid. Always a very under-owned guy. He is a around-the-green specialist, and, you know, you're really good around the green. Might as well take him at the place where the holes are the smallest. So go wild, Bads. Very good POA putter. Just, you know, one of the best putters on tour over the last decade or so. And he actually has a win here in 2011. He has four top 20 finishes since then. It could be a very sneaky play down there at $6,300. And after that point, there's not much left in the field that's any good. I mean, Sam Ryder seems like an okay play at $6,200. Of course, my boy CT Pan, $6,200. Although, if I wasn't a fan of him, yeah, it wouldn't really be that great of a play. And then another guy has been an enigma to me. I mean, he's probably too old at this point, but Steve Stricker. So he's 0-3 and made cuts to start the year. So his always makes the cut thing, or makes 90% of cuts thing, it's kind of gone out the window. I mean, it's about time for him to head full-time to Champions Tour, but he's a winner here in 2010. Seriously good course history here. The few times you've seen him since, he's finished T29 and most recently T11 in 2016. Just kind of interesting. Only 275 off the tee, by far the shortest of anyone here, but just interesting. And after that, I can't really in good faith recommend any of these guys at the bottom. I just can't. So I think I ended up having like a full length pod here. Yeah, an hour long. God, I'm like, I need to clear my throat with something awful. So best of luck to you guys this week. Let's keep up the good form here. You know, it's been an awesome start to the season so far. I've been very profitable. I've had some guys win some huge bucks already. And remember, if you want to get in on the action here at DFSArmy.com, check out the research station that I reference constantly throughout this pod. Get the Domination Station Lineup Optimizer to make up to 300 lineups. Roll them out there for PGA or whatever sport you're into. DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. Get you that lifetime 20% off discount. And hopefully I'll see you there. Hit me up in the Slack channel if you have some questions for this week. And yeah, that'll pretty much do it. I will see you guys next week when you head out to Florida for the Florida Swing. Or, no, actually, I think it's Mexico first. Then we do the Mexico-Puerto Rico week, and then we go to Florida. I'm pretty sure that's what we're doing. So I'll see you guys wherever we're at next week. Good luck.